From Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And I'm Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight.
That's right. This is a special evening, as Hino and I will be bending the laws of space-time continuum.
Yeah.
Starting the show from Belfast and ending live in studio here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Man, I'm feeling a little jet lag just thinking about it. But here we are in Northern Ireland taking part in the 11th annual Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival.
We're enjoying the music, the pints, the company of songwriting buddies on either side of the Atlantic. We're going to be visiting with Cara Dillon and Foy Van while we're here.
Yep, and then we're going to be back at the WSM studios visiting with a group of writers that were selected to come back to Nashville from Belfast to perform in Music City in hour two.
That's right, and we want to send a special thanks to our pal Steve and all the other great people at Avalon Guitars. They hooked us up with beautiful instruments while we're here performing in Belfast. Check them out at avalonguitars.com. We love those guys. Now let's get to it. Hino, do the honors.
Absolutely. Now, first up is award-winning Irish folk artist Cara Dillon. From her early days of singing for family and friends to her stints in several successful bands like Equation and Polar Star, Cara went on to a successful solo career supported by her musical cohort and husband, Sam Blakeman, who's also here with us. Along the way, she's won many awards, including BBC Radio 2's Horizon Award and Meteor Music Award's Best Irish Female. So we are thrilled to death to say, Cara Dillon, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yay. Yeah.
Woo. The crowd goes wild.
Yeah.
All three of us. It seems to me that you and Sam have had a real clear vision and understanding of what your voice and your musical choices were going to be, even to the point of walking away from a major label deal. Talk about that and talk about what drives you creatively.
Well, you know, I think probably it's because of our upbringing. We were saturated with traditional Irish folk music and song. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, when we were about 19, we were dangled the carrot of the big record deal. And we took it for a little while to explore it and see what might happen, like most 19-year-olds would want to.
Sure,
and
absolutely.
Then we kind of got to a stage where, you know what, it wasn't us. And we were compromising everything that we were really about.
So what were they trying to, get you to do Irish traditional, but with
some hip-hop beats and that kind of thing?
Yeah, there was a bit of that. I think, you know, like, you'd be foolish, like, looking back now, be foolish to think that you were going to sign up to something like that and not for them to expect some kind of commercial success. And, of course, you know, exactly.
That's crazy talk right there.
And so, you know, somewhere along the line, I think myself and Sam sat down and decided, you know what, we just want to play music and we want to play live music. And the kind of music that we feel really confident and comfortable doing. Mm-hmm. And so we went right back to our roots, recorded our first album in a room in his parents' house, and decided to just go on the road with it. And it won a few awards and basically set us up for what we're doing now. So 5 albums later, we're happy. We're doing what we like, and it's great.
Well, that's awesome. Sam was just telling us that even 5 albums later, that first album is still huge in parts of the country, parts of the world.
China, for example.
You're going to China.
Well, exactly. We had a bit of a surprise because last year we were invited to go out to China. And we had no idea what to expect. Obviously, we'd never been really before. We thought maybe there'll be 50 people will turn up. But we did 4 shows and there was like about 2,000 people, sold out theatres. And
wow.
It was incredible. And we were trying to figure out how can this be. And it turns out our first 2 albums have been used as part of the curriculum there for teaching English. So, you know, there were lots of people singing along with lots of the songs that I grew up with very strong County Derry Irish accents.
Right.
Mixed with a bit of Chinese. Yeah. So it was an amazing experience. So we're going back for more very soon. In fact, on Sunday, we're heading back out. So
that's fantastic.
Man, that's awesome. Well, you mentioned the earlier bands. The first one, I believe, was Equation, where you met Sam.
Yeah.
You were a bit outnumbered in that band, 3 brothers and you. So
I don't think she was outnumbered at all.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably held her own just fine.
You know, I think maybe you're right. But for those listening, a lot of our audience are aspiring writers and performers who are contemplating starting a family band. What are some of the tips of the pitfalls, the ins and outs that you should do or not do?
Don't
and
do
and
it.
your husband is like giving the no sign right there.
You know, Sam and his two brothers they're all very talented.
Yeah.
And they're great together musically. But I think, you know, when you get three very talented siblings together, there's going to be times when everybody doesn't agree. And unlike other bands that get together, people in families don't hold back like saying what they really think. So
that's
it's probably
true.
Best that everybody does their own thing and
you're
get together at Christmas.
You're a lot more polite with strangers than your own family.
To sing a few carols around the tree maybe is the way forward.
That's probably okay. Best. Well, I can't even pretend to know anything about traditional Irish folk other than I love to hear it. When you are primarily recording songs that have been passed down for generations, is it easy or is it harder to write in a style that complements the kind of style that you're known for instance, like Hill of Thieves?
That song, you know, it's funny because sitting down to write a song like that, it came very, very naturally. And,
okay.
You know, it's just... It kind of goes back to just, again, the kind of music I was brought up with and the songs. And, you know, this particular song, The Hill of Thieves, it's all about the area, funny enough, where I was born and raised. And lots of the history about it and the different names of the land. The Hill of Thieves is a mountain that surrounds a town that I'm from. And So, you know, I think even writing songs, that type of music, it just comes through. It's in your blood, mm-hmm. and it's in your soul. And no matter how you try and ever escape, it's not going to happen. So it's just always going to be there.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Oh, that's great.
Well, speaking of writing that style of music, what are some of the unwritten rules for traditional Irish folk? Like, for example, in traditional bluegrass, drums are a no-no. You don't do that. What kind of things do you have to avoid? Are there any lyrical constraints or... Music,
rap?
Any rap sections?
Well, writing a song, in my own personal experience, I'm not very good at singing the word baby. You know, yeah, no, it doesn't work with me at all, but it might be just my accent. But, do you know, I think it's very good to be open-minded.
So and, no Britney Spears covers?
No Britney Spears.
Oh, baby, do that.
Hit me one more time.
Yeah.
I don't think that would really work.
I'm going to hit you one more time just for saying that.
But, no, I think, you know, it's not good to be too narrow-minded, and it's good to be open-minded, and it's led me down an amazing path, and I've worked with incredible people. I mean, in the past, I've worked with... Mike Oldfield. I've done a few of the transatlantic sessions where we've worked with Jerry Douglas and you know, I'm trying to think of Dan Tominski. He came over and did some shows with us here recently.
Yeah.
And this is the biggest one for me so far was being asked to sing on a Disney movie.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
I mean, if I was a complete purist, I would have said, no, I'm not buying into any of that. But absolutely one of the best experiences. We went to Abbey Road in London and I recorded it with a 90-piece orchestra.
Wow.
And an incredible experience. And that's a worldwide, you know, a song.
This is the Disney? Yeah.
Disney, that, Tinkerbell. It was a Tinkerbell.
Yes, right. It was the opening song for that, that. We have that actually on DVD. My 9-year-old daughter was over the moon. That I was going to be talking to the girl who sang that, because she was very, very thrilled about that. So how did you even narrated the opening
I
sequence
did.
On that?
Funny
didn't
enough,
you?
There, you know, like obviously you can hear how I'm talking. My accent is quite thick,
right?
And when I got to London, they were saying, "Oh, that's such a sweet, cute accent. Is there any chance would you be interested in reading out the narrative?" And I couldn't believe that anybody would want my speaking voice to be heard. But I give it a shot, and I'm so pleased that I did. It was a special moment.
Well, for those wondering, that's Disney's Tinkerbell and the Great Fairy Rescue. So
that's
go find that. How did you get the gig in the first place? How did they find you and bring you in?
Well, very randomly. One of the engineers who was recording the session in Abbey Road, he had been to Dublin, and he had seen myself and the band performing there like many years ago. And it kind of stuck in his head. This is what he told me anyway. And he said that they were looking for my particular type of voice. And he said, listen, you got to check out Cara. And it was very, very quick, apparently. It all happened. And I got the email. I got the call. And I went.
Nice.
That's
all right.
Fantastic. We talked about this before we finally started this interview, but Maid of Culmore, I told you I didn't even realize I was holding my breath until the song was over. It's gorgeous. And I started thinking, because, you know, we play out, and what you're doing, this is not background in a bar music. you know, you can't be doing this where people are fighting and talking and hitting on each other.
Shouting at the TV.
Is it difficult getting started, finding venues and to find that audience for this style?
I think, you know, starting out, we played lots of folk clubs here where, you know, the listeners are, the audience are there to just listen specifically to those songs. And then we moved on to, like, art centres. And then more recently, we've been doing quite big festival halls with orchestras. Sometimes we've had an orchestra join us. And I think, you know, I've gotten to a stage in my career where I've got, you know, there's 5 albums now. And I'm a bit of an established name, I suppose, in the folk circle.
Yeah.
And people listen. But I think, you know, the kind of music, anyway, that it is, it's very, very, it stirs your soul. And I think sometimes you just stop what you're doing and listen anyway.
Right.
Not just to me, but just of this type of vein of music. People are silenced at a bar when they hear some of these songs. And I think it's because it's generations before us. They're speaking through my voice, and I think I'm just a vessel for the story others never really got a chance to pass on.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, after that answer, we actually would love to hear you sing a song. What do you feel is singing for us?
Well, because you mentioned The Hill of Thieves, one of the songs which I wrote, I thought you might like to hear that one.
Oh, love that. Great. Love that.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with more of Kara Dillon here on the Music Row Show. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are coming to you from the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival in beautiful Belfast, Northern Ireland. We're here right now.
We're at the Empire Music Hall. The historic Empire Music Hall. We were just listening to Morlock Mary, which is off of Kara Dillon's latest CD. And where can people buy your music?
Well, you know, you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on our caradillon.com. Go there and check it all out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I do want to say this wasn't in our plan here, but Music City Roots has been awesome
Let
us use their stage for a few minutes to interview Kara, and we really appreciate that. So thanks to Music City Roots, and we love watching them on public broadcasting all the time. So check that out. Really quick, how long until the kids join the band? I hear the four-year-old's quite the dancer.
She's the dancer. Yeah. We've sorted for the dancer. And the other one is very theatrical. And the other one is, he's playing fiddle.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot
going
on.
So is he nervous?
Uh-oh.
Is
your fiddle player nervous
tick-tock,
there?
Tick-tock.
Uh-oh. Tick-tock.
That's interesting.
So we'll see what way it all pans out. But, you know. It's great. We've often talked about sort of maybe coming over to America and touring it with the kids and just when they're a bit older and just enjoying it. The music's there to be enjoyed.
Well, twin fiddles are pretty big in the U.S., so maybe
you
could stick around and, you know, we'll just add one more to the mix. There you go. Looking out for you there. So when I was reading up on you, I saw a lot of comparisons between you and Kate Bush in terms of your singing voice. And I'm a big fan of hers, so, I mean, that's a compliment. How do you feel about being compared to other singers, and what did you do along the way to kind of establish your own identity for yourself to say, hey, this is me and this is what I do?
Well, I'm hugely flattered that anybody could compare my voice to Kate Bush's because I'm her biggest fan. I went recently to see her when she was playing in London.
Really?
I got one of the special tickets.
Yeah.
That, you know, it wasn't a special one. They're all special.
Right.
Just to clarify.
But you actually got in the building.
Yeah, I got in the building.
Well, that's good.
And, you know, she's been a huge inspiration to lots of women all mm-hmm. over the world. But I think with regards to my style, there's no secret formula. You know, I haven't had any training or anything like that. I open my mouth every night and hope for the best. Fingers crossed. I love what I do and I'm passionate about it. And I think anyone out there who is interested in, you know, making it at all in any way if they're a singer or musician, I think just if you're passionate and you follow your heart and, you know, if people like listening to you, mm-hmm. you're on the right path,
right,
really.
Right.
I think, you know, you can't kind of decide you want to sound like someone. I think that's the wrong way to go about it. Yeah.
There's already that someone.
There is, exactly. And you've
there.
Got everyone's unique and special, and they've got their own way of singing or playing, and they've got their little accents. And I don't think it's, I think it's very important to not lose that. That's what makes someone unique.
Right.
That's the reason why I can't say baby when I'm singing. It just doesn't work. I say no as well. Well,
I'm going to think of that now whenever that comes
every
up.
Every time
in
I
a
hear
song
oh,
lyric.
Baby. So I have to live vicariously through you for just a minute. You have performed your music with the Ulster Orchestra, the Scottish Symphony Orchestra, and many, many others. What do you remember about the first time playing with that big orchestra behind you, and how different is that experience from playing with the band?
I think, you know, it's such a different experience. I mean, when we're playing as a band, there's moments of great beauty in the music. There's moments where you just get lost in the music. And, mm-hmm. you know, the songs, some of the little arrangements are absolutely beautiful. But playing with an orchestra, I think the songs that I tend to sing, especially the ones about emigration, I think they really come alive big time with an orchestra.
Really?
It's incredible. There was one point I was singing a song called The Streets of Derry. And we were playing in Scotland, and this orchestra, they were holding this note, and it was just as this man is just about to be hung in the song. And I could feel the goose pimples rising through my body.
Wow.
And I just thought, the orchestra have captured the essence of what this whole song is about in this one moment. And it's such an incredible experience. And I think the music really lends itself to working with an orchestra.
Now, were you in on the arrangements in any way, or was it a complete surprise to you what they were going to do when you got on stage?
No, we had a very good friend of ours called Anna Rice wrote the arrangements, and she kept us posted on every song, every step of the way. And it was just wonderful then to see them all take shape and to hear them, because, you know, you have a fair idea what it might be like. Mm-hmm. You know it's going to sound silky and smooth and big and dramatic and all of those things, but actually standing and the sound of an orchestra on stage, when you're on a stage with them as a lone singer, is just overwhelming.
Wow.
So, I'd love to do a lot more of that kind of thing.
Well, you know, we have a symphony in Nashville.
Yes, we do.
If you do come to Nashville, will you come visit us and spend an hour with us?
Oh, we definitely have to do that.
We would love that.
We'll call in and say hello.
Absolutely. Well, we know you've got another show. You got a show tonight you need to go prepare for.
Go get ready.
But we are here at the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival. Is this your first time playing at the festival? What does it mean to you to play at festivals like this, especially here
in
Belfast?
Oh, it's just amazing. I mean, I love playing back here at home. I'm just from down the road in Derry, and some of the best gigs we've ever done are here.
Yeah.
And I think people really connect with the folk music that I'm singing, because it's just part of their being. It's part of their blood.
Right.
And so they really love the very, very slow, haunting sounds of the slower songs. But then when it comes to the more lively ones, they all go for it. So it's a great atmosphere. And obviously to be here tonight, I'm a huge fan of Foy Vance. And the others. I mean, my God, it's going to be a great night of music and crack. So can't wait.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Thank you so much for visiting with us. The website is
caradillon.com.
That's easy enough to remember. Right. Caradillon.com.
And speaking of Foy, he's going to be here in just a second. But thank you very much for being
here.
Thanks
a million.
With us.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right.
It.
Yay.
Thank you.
Yeehaw.
Scenery's changing, and it warms my soul. I'm 200 miles down and a long way yet to go.
All right, now stepping up to the mic and joining us here is Foy Vance. Scott, why don't you go ahead and do the honors?
Yes, sir. You know, next up, wonderful artist. I have been enjoying his music, his songwriting, and his unique voice in the last few weeks as I've been researching and getting ready to talk to him.
Yeah.
He's toured with everybody from Bonnie Raitt to Ed Sheeran, scored an Oscar-winning short film, and recently released his latest album titled The Joy of Nothing. We are so excited to say, Foy Vance, I'm glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Woo! This is us clapping right there.
Thank you both.
So for people in the States who might not know your music and know you, what got you started in the music business, or even just down the path of having a career in the music business?
Well, music's always been a huge thing in my house. And I had three older brothers, actually, and they were all pretty avid music fans. The eldest boy, he liked everything that was current at the time. So in his record collection, there'd be everything from Prince and Michael Jackson to Meatloaf and everything in between. He just liked it all. Then the next brother, he had those old 8-tracks that we brought back from time in the States. And he'd have all this like Kris Kristofferson and like trucker music, you know.
Right.
That type of stuff. And he also loved the Jam and the Who. He was a bit of a mod. And the other brother, he was into punk, like the Damned, the Clash, Sex Pistols, et cetera, et cetera. And it all sounded like music to me, you know. It all sounded great. I got bitten by the bug, I guess, pretty early.
Wow.
Wow.
That's quite a combination.
It is.
Sex Pistols and Kris Kristofferson.
But you know what? Is there that much of a difference, really? Like, with obviously sonically there's a huge difference.
Right.
But
when you break it down.
Yeah. If you're just looking at the lyrics.
Yeah.
And the chords.
That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I think Merle Haggard is the biggest punk around. You know, he's pure punk. Bob Dylan, he was a punk. Thelonious Monk. Anyone that takes the norm and changes it to suit themselves is a... You know, it's got that same attitude, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a T-shirt that says Miles Davis was a punk and Merle Haggard was a punk.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I'd
wear that down the road in Nashville, see what happens.
That's right. Well, Miles Davis, that won't offend anybody.
No
who in the hell is that?
So you spent several, by the way, that was a very good Southern accent there. Wow, you spent several years growing up in the U.S., I think in Oklahoma is where you were based at, right?
Canton, Oklahoma.
Your father was a preacher, and how did that influence you musically, being in the different parts of the Southeast.
Well, you know what? It didn't really influence me overtly. Mm-hmm. It sort of came through later when I started writing songs. I started to realize quite how much I'd been influenced by that type of music. And I think when we moved back to Ireland, we always looked at America with this kind of wistful, like it was the land of milk and honey, you know.
Right.
If only we stayed in America, my dad always used to say, if only we'd stayed in America. So I always had this kind of longing for America. And then when I started writing, I naturally would fall into this, I guess, when I started writing, it was more like country stuff or and the old soul stuff, that kind of gospel-y type music.
Okay.
Then I started to realize actually that it must have impacted me growing up. Well, we were talking earlier about that the
Church of Christ.
Well, that old rabbi, the rabbi that said, right. "Give me the child at the age of seven, and I'll give you the man."
Right.
So I think so much of your forming happens in those years, right? But like I said, I didn't know it until way later on.
Well, you were mentioning earlier that since your dad was with the denomination Church of Christ, mm-hmm. that particular denomination doesn't allow musical instruments.
Yeah.
So
go
all,
figure
the,
that
all
one
the music
out.
You were hearing was strictly voice.
Strictly voice. And it was, everyone would pick their parts out and you'd hear lovely harmonies and there'd always be at least one person who'd take it somewhere else, you know. There'd be everyone else would be the foundation and then there'd be one, usually William was his name.
Like William.
6 foot tall, maybe even taller than that, massive big guy. But he had a beautiful voice and he would soar over everybody else, you know. I grew up listening to that kind of stuff.
Nice.
Which was good.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely the first artist and recording artist that we've come across that actually set out to do a tour involving toilets.
Yeah.
So what possessed you to do that, and how did you squeeze the audience into the stall? I don't know how that works.
Well, thankfully there was no audience.
No audience.
No audience, aside from just a little film crew. you know what? Every time... I remember where it happened. It was... I think it was a town called Auchnacloy.
They have great toilets there.
Oh, I love their toilets. Nice reverb.
It was a gas station, a petrol station, and the toilet round the side. I went in, did what I needed to do, but then found that I was still standing there. I hadn't even put myself away. If you'll forgive me for getting so graphic,
what?
I hadn't even put myself away, and I was standing there for at least another 5 minutes just singing, and I realized. Oh, I'm just standing here singing in the toilet, you know, because the reverb was beautiful. And right there and then I thought, I should do a tour of this. When I'm touring around, I should also do a little show
in a
toilet, but film it, because the acoustics are great.
With yourself put away.
With myself put away, yeah.
Please,
I put myself away before I get into the car, obviously.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's probably best. best. You talk about your first album being a learning experience, and I'd like to know, talk about the difference between recording a vocal and recording a performance in studio.
Well, I think I'd be more inclined to lean towards the performance anyway, full stop. I don't know if I've ever really... I mean, I guess every now and then when I'm writing a song, I would think about the vocal, you know, just to get the melody down. I would maybe think about it then. But when you're actually recording it to put it down, it has to be performance. You know, you can't be.
But you prefer doing it live instead of going back in and doing a vocal later, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I've worked both ways. I did a record with a guy called David Holmes, who's a great producer from here. He's usually movies. He did like Ocean's 11 and.
Oh wow.
A lot of other great films. He did the score for Hunger. I don't know if you've seen Hunger.
No.
Steve McQueen film. Unbelievable film. Anyway, I worked with David and we did overdubs. I did overdubs with him, you know, because we were building up trying to create this sonic world, the identity that he had envisaged for the project.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you can still get a performance in by doing that, but there's something about... There's something about the collectivized performance. There's something about someone sitting beside you, and they're trying to articulate themselves as well. And just the energy that gets in the room. And it's the same energy that you get when you know it's going to tape, as opposed to just a hard drive. As soon as you know you're going to tape, the energy changes in the room. Everyone gets a bit more excited. So, I mean, I guess it's whatever the song wants. I mean, I think that's the real key for me, actually. I think the currency that we deal in is songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's the
yeah.
whatever is best for the song is
you honor
is,
it.
Is what's right.
Well, speaking of song, we'd love to hear you play one. You feel like busting one out for us?
Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah, I'll play a song called You and I. Well, tomorrow may not be like any other day, no. It's so hard to know not what with the collectively. See, lately they've been swinging high the wrecking ball, tipping dirt on the foundations I spent so long. Making sure they would be strong. But you and I, we are hard as stone. Ooh, you and I, we are hard as stone. And I may empty out my pockets in their hat one day, but then I'll turn my back and I will simply walk away. And they may think it over and reach out their hands, but I'll have long since disappeared by then, like water in the sand. Well, I see gold's all that they had planned, but you and I, oh, we are hard as stone. Yeah. Ooh, you and I, we are hard as stone. They're like palms on attack, and I'm back here castling, trying to find my feet, find my joie de vivre again. But I can make it on my own. I may need something strong that I can build new hope upon. Well, you and I, we are hard as stone, yeah. Ooh, 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 ooh. You and I, we are hard as stone. Ooh, you and I. You and I.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Man, oh man. Well, you know, we were talking earlier with Tara about film placements. You know, mm-hmm. she had some film. You've had success in that area as well. Mm. Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, a bunch of shows have had your music in it. How did you get your music into?
I didn't really do anything.
You didn't do anything. No. If it were only that easy.
It was. The first thing was we sent CDs out like you do to everyone, and my managers at the time sent it out to like publishing companies, and it went to a girl called Alex Pat Savas, mm-hmm. who did the music for The OC and Grey's Anatomy and all that.
Right, so right.
That was the first one I ever got, and then after that, it's just been my publishers really kind of doing what they do best. You know, I wouldn't have a notion what to do or how to go about getting your getting your songs and that kind of thing.
Step one, get a publisher.
Yeah, yeah, get a team that'll do that for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like we were talking earlier, I was saying I don't really feel like I'm in the music business, and I like it that way, you know what I mean? Because music's always been what was my private joy for a long time. For the longest time, actually, it was just something that was for me, completely for me. It was my own pleasure, and, you know, it was something that we did around the house. When my Granny Macaulay would come down, she would, you had to do your piece. So
right.
I would always sing the Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond, she would make me sing. And my dad would get the guitar out, he'd sing all John Denver and Willie Nelson, that kind of stuff. And she would say, so music, that's what music was about for me, and I like to keep it that way if I can.
So what did Granny sing?
Granny, she sang mostly old hymns, How Great Thou Art, okay. Touched Me. Yeah, all the old classics.
The Bonnie Banks of what? I'm not familiar with that one.
Loch Lomond?
Mm-mm.
The Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond, you don't know it?
You do uh-huh. a little bit of that?
Oh, you take the high road and I'll take the low road and okay. I'll be in Scotland afore you.
Okay.
I know that one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just didn't know the title.
There you go. The Bonnie Banks of Loch Lomond.
Oh.
There you go.
Wow.
There you go. Well, can we take a break?
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to take a break. We're going to come back with a whole lot more of Foy Vance here on the Music Row Show. Come back in just a few minutes. The Music Row Show. We are here with Foy Vance. We're at the Belfast National Songwriters Festival.
Right now.
That's right.
Next hour, we're going to be back in Nashville bringing some of these great Irish songwriters with us. So we're
world travelers.
We're freaking people out right
I
now.
Know,
we're
man.
All over
Time
the place.
Travelers.
And we want to thank our friends at Avalon Guitars because when we knew we were coming here to perform, we didn't feel like packing our guitars. And,
right.
and Avalon was so kind to yeah. lend us a couple of guitars for the weekend.
That's how we roll.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But check them out at avalonguitars.com. They make beautiful instruments. We're here with Foy, and you were just talking about having that team, the publishers that was helping getting your songs out there, and you also just recently signed with Glassnote Records.
Mm-hmm.
What were the deciding factors in choosing them as a label, and what do they bring to you as an artist?
Well, firstly, that would imply that I had a plethora of
labels.
We
can make that. We can make that implication.
Sure.
And they were all clamoring at your door.
Yeah.
You know what? We had a couple of options actually, but Glassnote just they seemed like a more natural home for me because, you know, they were they liked me as I was basically. You know, I think we spoke to a few people along the way that you know would give the whole oh we really like what you're doing here but could you give us a song like this. And as soon as I hear that, it's like, oh, forget it. You're missing the point, you know.
Right.
I want to make records that I want to make and someone to partner alongside me. And, yeah, it's more important for me to make a record that I think is worth making than it is to make a record that makes money.
Who needs money? It's overrated.
You don't need that much of it, you
know. But you're doing pretty well for yourself, so it's obviously working.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm ticking over, you know, but I work. Hard, you know, I work, yeah. I tour a lot, and I've just started writing with other people, which it was an interesting one to start doing. I've never really considered that in the past, but the last 2 years.
Co-writing,
so
you mean?
Yeah. Last couple of years, I have been doing a bit of that, and, you know, if you think about it, you don't really need that much to get by, do you? You know, my rent is cheap, you know, kind of food's pretty cheap, beer's. Right. Pretty cheap.
And beer is food. So
well, Guinness is.
Yeah.
Guinness
yeah,
is. You know what I mean? Chew it sometimes. So
yeah. Exactly, you know.
Well, let's talk about the fact that you've just kind of recently started co-writing. How big of an adjustment was that for you? And what have you, how do you approach a co-write as opposed to just working on one your own?
Well, generally speaking, I've co-written with other artists. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a clear vision.
Right.
For, you know, it's for them and it's for, you know, I don't co-write for myself. And that's not out of being snobby or anything. It's just I prefer to keep my own thing, you know.
Right.
So there's always a clear guideline as to what this is about and who it's for. And, like, I've been writing with Ed Sheeran a fair bit over the last while. So it's always for him. And we just talk ideas. And he's great to write with, actually, because he kind of writes in a similar way that I do in that he you know, he works fast.
Right.
He works fast, and you basically you're just aiding him, really, you know. You're just being a sounding board for him.
Kind of being the editor in the room.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's kind of like going, maybe we should do this instead of that. It's, you know, I mean, obviously you got to come with ideas, but
sure.
Someone like him, you know, you just kind of watch him go and just help him along, you know, help him write his song type thing.
Well, he's been exploding the last couple of years. Good for him.
Yeah, rightly so. He works hard too. You know, he's got a great work ethic, that guy.
He was living in Nashville for a little while, I think.
Hendersonville.
Hendersonville, okay.
Yeah, I was out there. Yeah, we stayed there for, I think he was there about 6 months or something. I was out for a month or two of that. Lovely part of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely, right on the lake there. Or the is it a river? Actually,
no, it's a little above. It's Old Hickory Lake, yeah.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Just beautiful. Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Well, are you, I understand you might be giving up music and heading into the acting world because you had a little part in a film, didn't you, not too long ago?
I played the part of a busker in in a movie.
So a lot of research went into that.
Yeah, lot of research, you know. And I had, you know, I thought it was a pretty good line. My line was, but I've got a license. Uh-huh. And I thought it was like some deep Robert De Niro stuff, you know.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, let's hear that again.
Hang on. But I've got a license.
Ooh,
that's good.
I felt it that time. Well, that short film actually went on to win an Academy Award, didn't it?
That was The Shore. Yeah, that was another film with the same director, actually, okay. Terry George. The Shore, the short film that went on to win the Academy Award.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah. I wasn't there, though. The other guy that I scored it with, David Holmes, he was at the awards, but I was in Nancy's Bar in Ardrah in Donegal playing Scrabble.
Yeah.
Well, if you had to pick, you know.
Yeah, do you know what?
Probably had more fun.
Having been at the Grammys there 2 weeks back, I think I prefer to be in the bar.
Yeah.
Award shows are a nightmare.
They are.
There's just a funny energy in the room. Yeah. Just funny energy altogether. I didn't really think much of it, you know, and I didn't hear too many conversations. Well, I heard lots of conversations, but they were all going on at the same time. You know,
right.
You know what I mean? There was a... Yeah, so I took myself aside. I was there with a couple of mates, and we just disappeared off.
There nice. You go. Now, so then, did you get the little Oscar statue?
No. I got to hold it though.
You did.
You got to. Yeah, well, that's good, right there.
Something, I guess.
Terry brought it back to Ireland, and we had a night. You know, I sang a couple of songs, and he gave a speech and that kind of thing. So I got to hold it for a minute. But then I had to give it straight back.
They just didn't trust you with it.
No, I shouldn't be trusting them.
That's hurtful.
All right, well, where can people find out more about you if they want to check out your music?
FoyVance.com.
Easy enough. FoyVance.com. And,
Are we out of time?
We spent the whole time. We're done.
Oh, man. Well, okay, real quick, have you enjoyed the festival?
I have, yeah.
Have you done this one before?
I've done this festival a few times. But, I really enjoyed this one. I got one of those in the rounds with Ken Haddock and Bruce Coburn.
Yeah.
And Ken Haddock is someone that I grew up idolizing. You know, he's just got one of the greatest voices ever, full stop. He's a great, great singer and a good writer too.
So and Bruce is pretty good.
And Bruce...
He's all right, yeah.
Well, Ken Haddock introduced me to Bruce Coburn, so it was just a lovely night for me to be sitting there, you know, with Ken sitting with his hero.
Yeah,
and me sitting with two of mine. It was really lovely, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's great. Well, awesome. thanks for joining us, and next time you come to Nashville, you have to holler out and come see us.
Love to.
All right. Yeah, we've had a great time here at the Belfast Nashville Songwriters Festival, and it's been just a great, great trip. So we're hoping that we get to come back someday.
We'll be right back with more of the Music Row Show. We're going to have a bunch of great Irish songwriters joining in, so stick around.
That's right. It's going to be awesome. Strong.